Well, hello and welcome to the latest edition of the Star Blades. We're firmly at the business end of the season, and I'm joined by James and Danny, our Blades correspondents. Big weekend to come. I'm sure we'll come on to that in a bit. But first, Bournemouth. James, start with you as always. It kind of felt like a decent result in isolation, but could have been so much better.
Yeah, it was a decent result in isolation. There's no doubt about that. Bournemouth are second in the table. Sheffield United are going for a place in the playoffs. And I think it's fair to say that it's a match that some of United's rivals will have been looking at and keeping their fingers and everything else crossed that they would have been dropping points. But I think overall, they'll be happy with the result. The one thing they'll be desperately frustrated with was the manner in which that result came about. It was interesting afterwards to hear Paul Heckingbottom say that he felt it was a case of 2 points dropped. And I can understand why. There was some obvious frustration with some of the refereeing decisions that went on during that game. The most notable of which was a ridiculous decision by the match officials not to penalise Nat Phillips, former Sheffield United target, of course, for what was the foul to end all fouls on Morgan Gibbs-White inside the penalty area. Of course, had that spot kick been awarded, Sheffield United would have had to have converted it. And they had a great chance to win it at the end of the game with Filip Jurimović. But I think it was understandable why Paul Heckingbottom was so angry afterwards. He's a manager who does his best to keep his emotions in check. It's very rare to see him get riled or too upset after a fixture, no matter what's gone on. But he did make the point that it wasn't the first time Sheffield United have been on the wrong end of a decision in recent weeks. And I think another point that he went on to make was also very, very valid. And that is that these decisions, we're not talking about fouls here where you can look at it and think, well, maybe it was, maybe it wasn't. There's sort of room for interpretation in that. These are black and white decisions. And it almost brought sort of memories of Rafa Benitez and his famous facts check sheet when Paul was going through some of those after the game. He mentioned a decision at Stoke where Sheffield United also felt they should have had a penalty and two disallowed goals at Blackpool. I think all of us are still trying to fathom out why those goals were ruled out by the officials.
Yeah, time for VAR in the Championship, Danny, do you reckon?
I'm laughing there because VAR since what seems like the beginning of time, going back to the Premier League days. Well, I can certainly see Paul's point. I'm trying to be diplomatic about this. In that, you know, the Championship now is a highly regarded league in the world, you know, in terms of the kind of money that's riding on it, you know, for promotion to the Premier League. And I think when you are on the wrong end of decisions like that, you can certainly make a case for VAR, can't you? I mean, I can't imagine that the referee would have taken too many replays to see that Morgan Gibbs-White was fouled on Saturday. I still can't understand for the life of me what he's seen. You know, sometimes when we talk about referees should be made available for interview, and I understand the reluctance to do that, to not make him a little bit of a punching bag. But also at times like this, you would love to just say, what have you seen there? What do you think has happened there? Because everyone, you know, 29,000 people, I think, in the ground are just waiting for the whistle to go. And to not hear it was just staggering. You know, you talk about decisions week in, week out, but that was possibly the most blatant penalty I've ever seen that's not being given. And I'm still scratching my head nearly a week on to work out why. So, yeah, people point about, you know, introducing VAR when you are on the wrong end of such decisions. And again, as James said, you know, the issue I think most people have with VAR is the sort of interpretive nature of decisions. But these are not decisions that need to be interpreted. You know, that on Saturday is a penalty. Ollie Norwood away at Blackpool. Who's offside there? No one that's interfering with play. Reece Nanton-Davies at Stoke. The Stoke boy goes in for the ball, doesn't get the ball, gets the man. You know, it's a penalty. You know, you're not talking about, you know, shades of grey and, you know, black. You're talking about black and white decisions. So I can certainly see Paul's point on that. I think he mentioned it himself, you know, if we're all talk about luck and decisions and it all evens itself out over a season, United have had, you know, a lot go against them this season, and I can't think of too much that has gone for them. So if that is true about luck evening itself out, then, you know, United should, in these last five games, have a hell of a lot of things going for them.
Yeah, a playoff penalty shootout victory comes to mind.
Don't talk about that.
I just want to jump in there. VAR in the Championship, absolutely not. VAR shouldn't even be in the Premier League. Let's get rid of it. I think what we do need is better communication from the match officials, which is something that Wes Fodringham actually touched upon during United's press conference early this week. I think before we all start kicking match officials, and I'm not having a pop at you here, Danny, because I would have said exactly the same thing. I would have couched it in exactly the same terms. But when you say, and I might be wrong on this, but when you say, well, what did the referee see? I think that's absolutely crucial, because I tell you what, I always remember many, many years ago, do you remember Pierluigi Collina? And he, you know, was a great ref. He made a few mistakes in his time, but overall, brilliant referee, brilliant official. He brought a book out, and I can remember reading that, and he made this really important point in that book. And he said, I'll cop for criticism for things where I've interpreted a situation badly. I've interpreted that situation incorrectly. What I won't cop for, and what I get really annoyed at, Pierluigi, that is, not me, is when I get criticised for something that I haven't seen or that I can't see. So I don't know if the referee's line of sight was impeded during that game, but where the communication comes down to it is the assistant was actually flagging for it. So I don't understand why those two didn't actually talk to each other and arrive at what was the right decision. But what we do need, and I appreciate I'm just going to totally contradict myself here, we don't need VAR in the Championship. We don't need VAR in football at all. What we need is just, I think, better decision-making from the referees. Players have got a part to play in that, because let's be honest, they'll all push the laws of the game to the absolute limit and try and take advantage of those at times. And then, and I'm not talking about Sheffield United here, but then they'll be the first ones to turn round and start screaming blue murder when an opponent does exactly the same thing and gets the decision. And we'll hear all this nonsense about consistent decision-making going on here, you know, when they make that virtually impossible themselves as players. But we need to, I think, just help officials, and we need to raise the standard of officiating. By and large, across the game, it's probably pretty good. But one of the reasons I don't like VAR, and I know this is a Sheffield United podcast, and I know we're talking about this, but I'm also a football fan, and I don't think Sheffield United deserve the very best decisions. Reading deserve the very best decisions. Of course, they're playing this weekend. But you know what? And so do Chelsea, so do Arsenal, so do Manchester United, so do Spurs. But I tell you what, so do Accrington Stanley as well. So do Chesterfield. So do all of those teams further down the football pyramid. And they can't afford VAR.
Right. I'm determined not to let VAR be the last word on this game. Jurimovic, Danny, first impressions, other than his finishing, it looks like a decent bit of business.
Balls to someone in the 94th minute or whatever it was. Philippe, as good as he is, probably the last man that you would have wanted on the end of that. But defensively, you know, I think it's been solid. It's been impressive. It looks hard, for want of a better word. You know, it made me laugh when Philip Billing, I think it was, tried to have a little bit of a coming together with him, and Big Phil was having none of that. And Mr. Billing soon retreated when he realised who he was up against. Made me laugh this week when West Fodderingham revealed that Juromovic is a source of, you know, pre-match kind of motivation, and also a little bit of a chuckle with some of the stuff that he comes out with, which you can imagine, because, you know, he is a passionate character, let's say, by the look of him. You know, he looks like he takes his work very seriously, and he's been very impressive. Kind of the best compliment that I can pay to him is that, you know, this week there's been talk of Chris Basham returning from injury after a long absence, and him coming straight back into the team is possibly not the automatic, you know, no-brainer decision that it may well have been. You know, in the last 6 weeks or so, it's kind of been if Basham's fit, he plays. But I think Phillip's been as solid as he has been, and it's now a little bit more of a headache, let's say, for Paul Heckenbottom. I mean, to be fair, cards on the table, if Bash is fit and, you know, fully firing, then for me he plays because of what he gives United going forward as well as defensively. But the point that I'm trying to make, probably rather clumsily, is that, you know, that decision's not quite as straightforward as it would have been. And I think that says a lot about how well Phillip has kind of slotted in to, you know, how United go about things. I think there were signs that it maybe took him a little bit by surprise, sort of the intensity and the, you know, just the way of English football, which of course he's not been, you know, exposed to before. So that's completely understandable. It was a brilliant tackle on Solanke, I think it might have been, or it might have been Billing, might have been Phil Billing, just that led to that kind of coming together. It was a brilliant kind of last ditch recovery tackle to get one of his teammates out of trouble. And you can just tell that he has that little bit of class. You know, he is, after all, an international footballer who's played against, with respect to Championship footballers, you know, he's played against a level above for his country. And that really comes across. So, yeah, I've been impressed with him. Seems like a good character from what, you know, we've read and what we've heard from people who know him better than we do. And, yeah, you know, I think it's been a solid signing. Signing that made a lot of sense. And I think it's obviously strengthened the problem position for United. So, yeah, full marks so far. And it'll be interesting to see when Bash is fully fit, who out of the two that Paul Heckenbottom chooses.
I'm really glad you brought Phillip up, Steve, because as you'll see, and everybody who's watching this rather than just listening to it, I've got my Phillip Juromovic jumper on. It's my own personal tribute to him. Yeah. But no, he's, as Danny said, I mean, he's a quality player. He won't be fazed by anything that English football atmosphere-wise throws at him. This is a lad who's been around Dinamo Zagreb, and I think as anyone who's watched football in the Balkans will know, that is certainly not a place for the faint-hearted. You very quickly get found out in that part of the world if you can't handle pressure and ridiculously crazy crowds as well, and I mean that in the right sense of the word. It certainly is an experience, and he is in a way, he's that classic sort of Balkans footballer, isn't he? He's as hard as what's it. Going to choose my words very carefully there, but he can play as well.
Definitely, I think as far as a new signing goes, I mean, I know there was some extenuating circumstances around it, but it's been a blinding bit of business. Just on the issue of Basham, I was going to come on to this later, but while we're on that topic, any news, James, when we kind of expect him back? I mean, it doesn't look like he's going to be in for Reading tomorrow.
Well, there's been some update, and obviously it's something that we ask Paul Heckenbottom pretty much every time we speak to him, either during the week or immediately after a game. And he did say that this week Chris Basham has returned to training. But importantly, those training sessions haven't been full training sessions. He said he took part in some group work, before the bank holiday weekend. But he did make the point that he's not actually been tackling. He's not actually been doing everything that every other player who is available for selection is going to be doing. And he has previously also made the point that Chris Basham's big test as he comes back from this medial ligament injury isn't going to be running. It's not going to be fitness per se. It's actually going to be when he goes in for a tackle, a block challenge, something like that. That is when we're really going to know, or the coaching staff and the medical staff are really going to know whether he's fit or not. So I think there's an important point to make here as well. Paul Heckingbottom does admit quite openly that he doesn't always tell the whole truth when it comes to discussing individual players' fitness issues. That is something that he does. And again, he said this quite openly to try and sort of throw opposition managers off the scent, to try and keep them guessing about the players and the personnel that Sheffield United might be selecting for any particular game. Paul Ince, of course, in this instance. But yeah, I don't know what Danny thinks. I'd be very, very surprised to see Chris Basham take part in this game, possibly even the bank holiday Monday trip to Bristol City as well. The great thing is, the way Filip Jurimović has been going, there is no need to rush him back.
What about Billy Sharp, Danny?
So I was going to say, Steve, there, it's just that sort of risk and reward thing, isn't it? Of, you know, rushing back players. Billy's the case in point, isn't it? That, you know, United obviously have relied on him so much this season for goals. Do you sort of, you know, twist a little bit and bring him back maybe ahead of schedule and risking breaking down again versus, you know, without him, you know, would you get into the playoffs anyway? I'm not saying they wouldn't without him, but it's that sort of risk and reward scenario, isn't it? So from what we can gather, Billy will be out this weekend. Cardiff is a more sort of realistic return date, by which point there'll be three games left, if I'm right in thinking. And that'll be a massive boost to have Billy back and fit and firing, hopefully to fire United back into the Premier League.
Great stuff. Reading then, Danny, I have to say I was quite amused by the comments from the Reading player, whose name escapes me, about the simple task of just chucking two or three in the back of the net and all the pressure being on Sheffield United, despite Reading being in a bit of a battle themselves.
Unbelievable. Stick it on the dressing room wall. This was it.
Yeah. I think
on the wall. Not that you need any more motivation, but yeah, when I read it, I must admit, I didn't have a lot of time. All we have to do is get there, start well, stick two or three goals in, and it becomes an easier afternoon. That's football for you.
Stand down, Paul Ince. Your services are not required.
Easy game.
Definitely. What sort of challenge do you expect from Bristol City, James? Because they're in that slightly strange position where they're almost certainly not going to go down. I think the relegation three could be confirmed as early as Monday. Obviously, they've got stuff to play for, but it's a weird sort of fixture for them, isn't it?
It'll be a tough game, but I don't get all this nonsense that you hear about pressure, because footballers, listen, they don't go into the game. They don't work hard to become professionals, to play in matches where there's nothing riding on it. So they want pressure. Pressure is a constant companion for any successful professional footballer. They're no strangers to it. They get it. And you know what? They actually want it as well, because it means something's at stake. And if you're a professional footballer and a highly paid professional footballer, compared to those of us who are grappling with the cost of living crisis, there's always something at stake. There's your own reputation at stake. And I don't think there's a professional sports person on the planet in any discipline who hasn't got, you know, a fairly big ego either. Arguably, they all need one of those to succeed. So there's always something at stake. Yeah, you're right. Bristol City can probably approach the game with a little bit more freedom than Sheffield United. I think that's fair to say. They could arguably just go out and say, you know what, let's enjoy ourselves. It's something that I can't understand. Listen, Michael O'Neill will tell me I'm talking absolute nonsense, and I probably am, because Stoke City won the game. But that's something I couldn't understand why Stoke City didn't do a couple of weeks back when they played Sheffield United. They're not going up. They're not going down. Just give the fans a little bit of entertainment rather than just trying to sort of grind out a result. But, hey, you know, I don't suppose Michael is watching this, but I do accept that he's forgotten more about football than I'll ever know. But going back to your original point, Steve, yeah, it will be a tough game. As I've said, Bristol City do have a little bit more freedom. They probably don't have as much pressure on them as Sheffield United do. But I tell you what, just look at the league table. Sheffield United are a better team this season than Bristol City. So I don't think, depending on what happens against Reading, of course, because that could change the entire complexion of the game, I don't think if Sheffield United do beat Reading, they're going to be going down to Ashton Gate like scared rabbits in the headlights, thinking, oh my God, you know, how on earth are we going to cope with this? They want to be in this situation, and they are, and well done.
Definitely. Danny, we lost you, but we've got you back, thankfully. The playoffs, it is so close. Can you confidently predict any of that final four at this stage?
No. I don't think anyone can. Anyone who says they can is lying to you, because, you know, it's as tight as, well, you know, the usual cliches. Especially, you know, Paul's been saying that for a few weeks, and so many teams are still playing, looking at the fixtures over the Easter weekend, you know, Forest playing Borough and, you know, Borough playing, you know, everyone seems to be playing each other who's still in there. So, and it can just don't change on one single afternoon. You know, it reminds me a little bit of the, not just in the motion race with Leeds last time when United went up, where it seemed to change, not just by the game, it seemed to change by the minute. There were times when, you know, United were clear and flying, and then they'd slip up, and then Leeds couldn't take advantage. Nobody really seemed to want it. And until that sort of last few final weeks, it kind of sort of sorted itself out, didn't it? So I'd expect something similar to happen this time. United have just got to stay in there, haven't they? It sounds obvious. They're in there now. It's in their hands, which, depending on your outlook as a Blade, can either be a blessing or a bit of a curse, depending if you're an optimist or a pessimist, based on the last few playoff campaigns that you've kind of endured. But yeah, this is the position that they want to be in. You know, teams below them would swap in a heartbeat. So I think it's just kind of embracing that now, as James correctly said. This is what footballers want. You don't want to be on the beach in the middle of April, do you, thinking about where I'm going to go on my holidays. You want to be thinking about, we've got a chance of going up here. And, you know, these chances might not come around too often. They might not come around next season. They might not come around for these players again. I mean, that's unlikely because they're good players, but I don't think you can look opportunities like this in the mouth. So, you know, they've got to go out there and take it. You know, they're in a brilliant position. We'd have all taken this, you know, 6 months ago, that kind of cliche. Well, longer than 6 months ago, at the start of the season. When they were floundering, we'd have all taken this, but that doesn't count for anything if you don't go make it count, does it? So, yeah, I wouldn't like to predict it at the best of times, because it's Sheffield United and it's the playoffs, which have never gone too well before. But I think with so many teams still in with a shout, I think it'll be very tight, and I think it might go all the way down to the very last game.
The one thing as well that, I mean, I wholeheartedly agree with Danny. I think the only thing you can say is that probably Bournemouth and Nottingham Forest are going to be in there. Bournemouth, obviously, they'll both be desperately hoping that they're not, because they're looking at going up. But I think one of those two will be in the playoffs, it's fair to say. But it's interesting because it makes every single minute now of every single game so, so important. And the reason why I say that is because this could come down to goal difference. Could be goals scored, could be goals against that actually decide who gets into the playoffs or not at the end of a season. So even if, and let's say, fingers crossed, Reading, don't just chuck it up top and stick three goals in and jobs are good and thank you very much. But let's just say Sheffield United are winning 3-0, 4-0 towards the end of their Good Friday game. They'll be so desperate, and it's so important not to just allow Reading to get a consolation goal. You know, if the same thing happens down at Bristol City, if the same thing happens against Cardiff, QPR, Fulham, the remaining games they've got, clean sheets, winning the games, clean sheets, and winning them, you would think, you know, by a few goals could be so, so important. Every minute, every single second, every single decision every player takes from now until the end of the season is going to be absolutely vital. It has to be right, because this could be a season when goal difference decides who gets in to the top six and who doesn't.
It's a nice note to end it on. Before we do, obviously there was the news about Neil Warnock officially retiring from management. I think we haven't spoken since then. James, I was wondering, do you have a story you could share that's clean? Perhaps a favourite memory of him over the years? You can answer no if need be.
You've put me on the spot there. There's so, so many of them. Absolutely so, so many of them. Not all of them, well, in fact, most of them probably aren't clean. I'll tell you what, come back to me on that next week and let me give it some thought. We should do a piece on that. But honestly, I could fill half an hour with memories of Neil. But I think we should do that one right. We should do that one correctly.
To be continued.
Yeah, possibly after the watershed as well. That might be an idea, Steve. But no, joking aside, football will be, I think there's a few referees who'll disagree with me, possibly a few opposition managers as well. But football will be a lot poorer without Neil. That's what I'll say. Great manager, great bloke as well. And yeah, retired until that quote, one last job probably comes up midway through next season.
We'll see. That's all for this week. Thanks for listening. And let's hope Sheffield United don't put too much stress on your bank holiday weekend. Cheers.